Peter B. Collins News and Comment. It's Wednesday, April 11th, 2018. Back in the late 90s, Bill Clinton was facing impeachment, and he launched cruise missiles into Sudan. It was memorialized in a Hollywood film called Wag the Dog. And as the Mueller investigation turns up the heat on Trump, evidenced by the raid on Michael Cohen's properties the other day, he's ready to wag the dog. Ready to distract the nation and the world with an unnecessary military assault on the nation of Syria. This is just a week after he said, "We're pulling out of Syria." And it's perhaps that statement that led to the events that have caused Trump to get ready to wag the dog. And so today we got these contradictory tweets from the comb-over. First, he said, "Get ready, Russia. The missiles will be coming, nice and new and smart. You shouldn't be partners with a gas-killing animal who kills his people and enjoys it." And then the kinder, gentler Trump tweeted with some source of lament, I guess, "Our relationship with Russia is worse now than it ever has been, and that includes the Cold War. There is no reason for this." Now, his grasp of history, I think, is deeply challenged here, but that's his view. He continued, "Russia needs us to help with their economy, something that would be very easy to do, and we need all nations to work together. Then stop the arms race, ? I mean, this is irrational, it's incoherent. And one of the concerns is that by launching these missile strikes before there's been any investigation of the scene in Douma, where we're told that 500 people were affected by the release of a chemical agent alternately referred to as sarin or chlorine gas, that if we strike in that area, we could destroy potential evidence. France is on board with this. Their new president, Macron, suggested today that a military response has been decided on. Allies are discussing the details of the operations. He tweeted that his government is continuing to exchange technical and strategic intelligence with allies to define our reaction, which will take place in the coming days. Now, this violates one of the main rules of Trumpism, which is, he says, you never signal your intentions. But it's clear that he relishes this distraction from his serious domestic problems. Now, inspectors from the Organization for the Prohibition of Chemical Weapons are preparing to travel to Syria, and they may be able to confirm a release of a chemical or a nerve agent. But in the past, they've shown an inability to determine responsibility for such events. The New York Times cheers him on, saying Trump and his advisors wait a more robust retaliatory strike against Syria than last year's 60 cruise missiles. Now, Trump, of course, has to one-up himself. It's got to be bigly and biglier, I guess. And what's fascinating to see is the silence of so many in Washington. The Congress gave Trump a blank check. They showered more billions on the Pentagon without putting any strings on them, saying you can't use this to attack so-and-so, you can't use this to initiate military action without congressional approval. There are zero restrictions. And a lot of people were comfortable with that kind of situation when Obama was in the White House. I wasn't. But many on the American left were. So the World Health Organization reports, based again on local sources, that an estimated 500 people went to Syrian health facilities with, quote, signs and symptoms consistent with exposure to toxic chemicals. And the Britain-based Guardian newspaper refers to this as adding to mounting evidence of the use of toxic gas in the attack, which killed at least 42 people, and has led to this looming confrontation. They say the symptoms include frothing at the mouth, suffocation, dilated, constricted pupils, corneal burns, and central cyanosis, a blue tinge to the skin. But this doesn't tell us who was responsible, if, in fact, a chemical agent was released. And we are rushing into military action. Russia has already said that it will try to shoot down any missiles or aircraft, presumably attacking Damascus, but the threat was pretty broad. And Scott Ritter, who I interviewed a few weeks ago for the Peter B. Collins in-depth interview series, he's the former UN weapons inspector who told the truth that Saddam did not have weapons of mass destruction when we invaded in 2003. And at the American Conservative, with a tip of the hat to Robert Blumen for linking me up to this, he writes a pretty honest piece where he analyzes the two competing narratives, what the West is asserting and what Russia and Syria are denying. And then he goes on to say, the bottom line is that the United States is threatening to go to war in Syria over allegations of chemical weapons use for which no factual evidence has been provided. This act is occurring even as the possibility remains that verifiable forensic investigations would, at a minimum, confirm the presence of chemical weapons, contradicting the Russian claims. And if the Security Council passes a resolution allowing for a properly mandated investigation team, actual attribution could be assigned. And he closes with this, pulling the trigger void of such information, especially when Trump is distracted by personal political issues, is not something the American people nor their representatives in Congress should tolerate. But we will. Yes, we will. Also at the American Conservative, a good piece from filmmaker Ron Maxwell. He is the guy who brought us the Civil War motion pictures Gettysburg, Gods and Generals, and Copperhead. And he compares Donald Trump to Samson, who is blinded by a ring of Delilahs, who he considers, he doesn't use the term deep state, but he references the neocons and the warhawks. He writes, the American people can see for themselves that regardless of whom they elect, regardless of which party is nominally in power, the United States remains in a state of perpetual war. Even after conservative primary voters rejected every single candidate associated with military intervention and wars of choice, and he's referring to Bush, Rubio, Christie, Kasich, and Fiorina, even after the Republican Party platform explicitly forbade military aid to Ukraine, even after the electorate rejected the serial interventionist Hillary Clinton, America still got perpetual war. And Glenn Greenwald, over at The Intercept, provides a lengthy analysis, and he kind of skirts the issues of the impending attack on Syria and whether it is justified based on the sketchy so-called evidence proffered so far. But his analysis is a comparison of Obama and Trump vis-a-vis Russia. And he basically counters the mainstream media notion that because Trump always says nice things about Putin and has been so reluctant to publicly criticize him prior to this sequence of events, he says the Trump administration has been more belligerent and more confrontational toward Moscow than the Obama administration. And he details it pretty well in his lawyerly way. He notes that if you just look at policy, this administration has taken steps the Obama administration wasn't willing to, including arming rebels in Ukraine, which I do not support, appointing an anti-Russia hawk at the UN, that's Nikki Haley, nominating an anti-Russia hawk as ambassador to Germany, then CIA director and secretary of state. Nominees are both very hawkish. Appointing a national security advisor, that's John Bolton, hostile to Russia, and the recent sanctions of Russian oligarchs closer to Putin. And Greenwald closes by writing, what makes all this more dangerous is the Democrats, both because of ideology and political maneuvering, have painted themselves into a corner where they cannot possibly provide any meaningful, credible opposition to Trump's increasingly dangerous path regarding Syria and Russia. Also, a curious footnote from a photo op in the Oval Office yesterday, Trump was hosting the Emir of Qatar, whose name is Emir Sheikh Tamim bin Hamad Al Thani. Now, it was just a year ago that Trump, apparently influenced by the advice of Jared Kushner, whose father had asked for a $500 million loan from Qatar and was turned down. Shortly thereafter, Trump, Kushner joined the Saudis in trying to ostracize Qatar from the Gulf Cooperation Council and the Saudi-led leadership ring in the Middle East. They wanted them to shut down Al Jazeera. Qatar has not done so. They want them to stop funding so-called terrorists. Qatar says it has. You know, it's very strange calculus on the part of Trump. And my guess is that he now needs the major military base that we are hosted at in Qatar to launch and coordinate this attack on Syria. Not a big surprise, but Speaker Paul Ryan is throwing in the towel. The Republican from Janesville, Wisconsin, has had enough. He's not quitting immediately. He will ride out the election cycle this year and step down in January, he says. And he expects the Republican majority to be maintained and that another Republican, either Kevin McCarthy of California, who was one of the most inarticulate elected officials to rise to the leadership I've ever seen in my lifetime, or Steve Scalise, the Louisiana Republican still recovering from his gunshot wounds at the softball game in Washington last summer. So Ryan gave the usual explanation that he wants to spend more time with his family. He, of course, will cash in and become a lobbyist, and we'll be hearing from Paul Ryan for another 40 years. He's not even 50 years old yet. And there are now 41 House Republicans who have announced that they are retiring this year. They're not all getting old. Many of them just think that being in Congress while Trump is president is really getting old. Every day I pause for a second to thank people who support my work here at the Peter B. Collins Podcast with your subscriptions. And today we mention Andrew Harnack, George Reeves, Jason Ferguson, Margaret Anderson. They're all staunch supporters of this podcast, and I'd like you to join them. Just visit peterbcollins.com. There's a menu tab. You click on that, pull on Become a Subscriber. You land on the sign-up page, and boom, you're all set with a subscription, hopefully, that fits your budget. Well, I mentioned the nominations of Mike Pompeo moving over from CIA to Secretary of State if Trump has his way and if the Senate confirms, and Gina Haspel being promoted to CIA director from the number two position despite her involvement in torture during the Bush era. Well, it's fascinating because Ryan Grimm at The Intercept has published a piece today showing that because Rand Paul, the unpredictable junior senator from Kentucky, has announced that he will not support either Pompeo or Haspel for confirmation to these posts. This creates a situation where the minority Democrats can join with Rand Paul, and if all the Democrats on the committee oppose these nominations, they will not be voted out, and it's not impossible to get them to the floor, but history shows that if the committee doesn't approve, the full Senate generally rejects the nomination. So Mike Pompeo has suddenly decided, well, maybe I'm not completely opposed to the Iran deal. And he, of course, was the Koch brothers' boy in Congress. He's got an appointment at the Senate Foreign Relations Committee this Thursday. And that's where the action is. But we haven't seen the Democrats really work hard to oppose any of Trump's nominations. Now, a couple of bad apples pulled out before they faced a possible rejection in the Senate. But we know that John McCain is most likely to vote against both Pompeo and Haspel. And that means the Democrats, if they are united, could block these two hawkish nominees. Now, I'm not overly optimistic about this. Chuck Schumer, after all, voted to confirm Pompeo as CIA director. So, this is an opportunity for activists. It's time for you to contact your senator and let him or her know that you oppose these dangerous nominations and that you want them to use their power to stop them. So here are the people who voted to confirm Pompeo as CIA director. They're the ones who really need some work. Schumer of New York, Donnelly, Indiana, Feinstein, California, Hassan of New Hampshire, Heitkamp of North Dakota, Kane of Virginia, Klobuchar, Minnesota, Manchin, West Virginia, McCaskill of Missouri, Jack Reed of Rhode Island, Schatz of Hawaii, Shaheen of New Hampshire, Warner of Virginia, White House of Rhode Island, and the nominal independent Angus King of Maine. And there's a great piece by Kevin Gostola at Shadowproof today detailing how all of the former war criminals have closed ranks to support the nomination of Gina Haspel, a known torturer, to run the CIA. The latest letter of support includes Kofor Black, John Brennan, James Clapper, Porter Goss, Mike Hayden, Henry Kissinger. All right, Henry! Yeah, he likes a good torture scene. Mike Morrell, Mike Mukasey, John Negroponte, Leon Panetta, John Rizzo, Jose Rodriguez, George Tenet, Fran Townsend, and others. And that Jose Rodriguez was a co-conspirator of Haspel in destroying tapes of brutal interrogation, torture scenes. Well, I'm a little surprised at this, and I hate to acknowledge that Trump may have successfully bluffed China into concessions over trade. It all remains to be seen. But President Xi Jinping, now president for life in China, yesterday portrayed the nation as committed to opening its economy. And without referring to Trump or the threats of tariffs that have been coming in recent weeks, he said the Cold War mentality and zero-sum game are increasingly obsolete. Only by adhering to peaceful development and working together can we truly achieve win-win results. He said he's going to ease restrictions on imported cars to China by the end of this year. Trump says that Chinese cars imported to the U.S. get a tariff about 2.5%, but American cars imported into China face tariffs of 25%. He often is challenged on the facts, so I'm reporting it, attributing it to him, because I haven't independently investigated that. But it's fair to say that China has made noises like this before, most recently at the Davos meeting in January of 2017. But it remains to be seen. The markets rallied after Xi Jinping's remarks were publicized. Trump made a big blunder. Grandstanding for the cameras as a deep opponent to sexual violation and sex trafficking. So he signed this really bad bill that shifts the liability for content posted on a website to the owner of that website. In the past, if I posted a sex ad on Craigslist, Craigslist did not have liability. But because of this law, Craigslist proactively removed all of its personal ads, even the ones aimed at platonic relationships. And this is the beginning of a shift that we'll see a lot of lawsuits. We know that Backpage was a sexually active website where a lot of sex workers were posting ads. Well, they've been taken over by the government. Lawsuits are flying there, including criminal cases against the owners of Backpage. But the unintended consequence of this is, as I stated, that there may be a website that refuses to post an item from the Peter B. Collins podcast because it considers it too edgy or unproven, and they fear, their lawyers fear, that they'll be held liable for commentary that is my own. So it's very dangerous. It's also dangerous for sex workers who essentially are being forced back onto the street corner to solicit employment. And even if you're deeply offended by men and women who use their bodies to make a living, I think you can appreciate that putting them at greater risk is not in anyone's interest. And I think we all will concede that you cannot wipe out prostitution. So, a group from Australia has set up a new application that's kind of like Twitter, but it's called Switter. I guess that stands for sex worker. And already there are, thousands of people who've signed up, 28,000 people. Since it's based in Australia, they are guessing, or at least hoping, that it is beyond the reach of American law enforcement. But I think this shows that the prostitution trade will find its customers, one way or another. And I'm not in any way condoning the abuse of these sites to promote illegal sex trafficking and the kidnapping and, forced slavery of females, including those underage. But this is not the right solution. I know many listeners have been waiting to hear this. Insiders report that Mueller is about to be fired. Let that sink in for a minute. It's not April Fool's Day. The Mueller I'm referring to, unfortunately, is the German Matthias Mueller, who is the CEO of Volkswagen. But Bob Mueller still has a job as the special counsel at the Justice Department. We're learning, according to the New York Times, that Trump made another aborted attempt to fire Mueller, most recently in December. We know last summer he made an effort, and his White House counsel, Don McGahn, said he would quit if Trump insisted, and Trump backed down. And after there were news reports that proved false about subpoenas coming from the Mueller investigation, that was in December, Trump started a new round of chatter about firing Mueller, but he was talked down from the balcony once again. And there is a bill circulating in Congress that purports to prevent the firing of Bob Mueller. But Mitch McConnell says he's not going to allow a vote on it in the Senate. And trying to plug all of the different ways that Trump might attempt to upend the special counsel investigation, he could fire Rod Rosenstein, the deputy attorney general that Mueller reports to. But he can't directly fire Mueller. And so it would be like with Nixon, a Saturday night massacre where you have to go through a number of officials who will resign before you can find a reliable toady who will execute the order. So it remains a fluid situation. And Trump is just unhinged enough and needs to wag the dog that it is very difficult to predict. So today he demonized a small portion of Americans who receive benefits from the federal government. Now, he's such an asshole that he considers everything from food stamps to Medicaid to be welfare. And he believes that it's a great Republican principle to require people to work in order to receive, quote, welfare. But most able-bodied adults who receive federal aid right now either already work or they're disabled, they are chronically ill, or they have other serious issues that prevent them from doing that. And so, of all the people receiving federal benefits, it's somewhere in the range of 10% who presumably could work but don't. And Trump, like Ronald Reagan, is making a big deal out of welfare queens and people who are takers instead of makers because it plays really well on Fox News. Well, the media was all over the Zuckerberg hearings yesterday and today. I listened to the equivalent of about 90 minutes of it. And Mark Zuckerberg was pretty good at dodging questions, at saying, "Senator, that's a very good question, and I'll have my team get back to you on that." He ducked some fairly simple questions about, you know, who collects the data and who can use it, that sort of thing. And he appears to be inviting some form of regulation. Now, those who are cynical say, well, look, he's already got a monopoly. Regulation will lock him in place. And so what if he has some restrictions that might reduce profits or growth of the platform a little bit? And so at this point, I have to say that the advantage goes to Zuckerberg. And to see these members, particularly of the Senate, struggle to talk about the internet, talk about the difference between pipes and platforms, it shows how ill-equipped they are to take on the task of regulating tech companies. Yesterday, I reported on the event from last December where an Israeli sniper shot at an unarmed Palestinian across the barrier fence in Gaza and wounded him. The shooting was followed by cheers from the Israeli snipers. And today, the Israeli military said it will censure the soldiers who shot that video and did the cheering. But they defend the shooting of the man, who was standing motionless and appeared to pose no obvious threat to the soldiers at the moment. He was shot during a violent two-hour riot December 22nd, and the man described as a suspected organizer was hit in the leg and injured. Now, this is always the MO of Israel. They are now demonizing the press photographer, the journalist who was covering the march in Gaza last Friday, Yasser Murtaha, or Murtaja, who was shot and killed by an Israeli sniper. He clearly had the word press on his jacket. And yet, the Israelis try to demonize him, claiming that he was a member of Hamas military wing, that he used his camera drone to gather information about Israel's deployment along the border. This 30-year-old man was skilled using drones for aerial photography, and he worked for Ai Weiwei on his powerful documentary about refugees that was released last fall, and we got our interview with Ai Weiwei. So Avigdor Lieberman, who has made these charges, offered zero evidence to support them. We are learning that the spill of the Keystone pipeline that occurred last November was twice as bad as initially reported. No surprise there. And finally today, I want to pay tribute to Yvonne Staples of the wonderful Staples Singers family from Chicago. I got my big break in radio in the 1970s in Chicago, and the patriarch of the Staples Singers, Pop Staples, his given name was Roebuck, he used to call into my radio show at 4 in the morning. And we became friends. We could joke about it. I'd say, hey, Pop, can't understand you. And he said, oh, just a minute. He said, yeah, I put my teeth in. Now can you understand me? And I love the music of the Staples Singers. Yes, the family's name is Staples, with an S on the end, but the band was called the Staple Singers, and I never got Pop to properly explain that. If you have a chance, there is a Talking Heads movie. I can't remember it offhand now, but Pop Staples got two cameo appearances in that film where David Byrne is prominently, I can see it, I just can't think of the name. And I'm going to put up a link to one of my favorite Staples Singers tunes in the show file for this podcast. Click on it, go to YouTube, and enjoy that in honor of Yvonne Staples, who passed away at the age of 80 yesterday. Thanks for listening to my Daily News and Comment podcast. We give it away free. You're free to share it with absolutely everyone. And if you find it on YouTube, click that little subscribe button.
Happy trails to you until we meet again. Happy trails to you. Keep smiling.